Lo, the winter is past, the rain is over and gone. The flowers appear on the earth, the time of the singing of birds is come, and the voice of the turtle is heard in our land.
Throws across his body, and he got it! We're going to wave a can around third. Throw from the outfield is up the line, inside the park home run! Deep! Gone! Whoa! Up and he makes a catch up against the wall, and he's gonna watch it fly. Strike three called. He got him on strikes.
Welcome to The Voice of the Turtle, a podcast feature of West of Woodward. We are online at westofwoodward.com and also on Twitter at VOTT Podcast. I'm your host, Hook Slide, along with my co-host, Rob Rojacki, managing editor at blessyouboys.com, contributor for Beyond the Box Score. And Rob, we've only got 1 week before spring training games start. So the question is your MLB TV ready to go?
I got the email last night. It's like the best and worst email of the year because they're like, oh, yeah, you know, baseball is back. By the way, we need $120.
Oh, that email.
Yeah.
Do they email you and ask? Or because me, I just get the email that says, hey, we just took more of your money. So
yeah, no, they just tell you that they're taking more of your money. But like they're I mean, I guess somewhat specific about it when you first sign up saying like this automatically renews. And I think that most people understand that.
Yeah, I didn't the first time. And
ooh.
I was surprised the second like round. Oh. I was like, oh, really? You just took that? Okay. But now that I know what's going on. Yeah. Pro tip, life hack here. If you paid by PayPal, you can actually go into PayPal and turn off that recurring bill. I found that out this year. So
yep, got a couple other things that I've done that for before, and that's a nice little feature.
That's very nice. So, all right, more on that in just a second. We do have a mostly full show today. We are going to talk about what is going on in Lakeland as the Tigers do prepare for the games that don't count starting next week. We'll look over the projection systems and see who's likely to be right. Of course, we'll talk about the passing of owner Mike Ilitch and what that means for the Tigers. We'll take some listener questions, and then we'll wrap up by chatting with Steve Mickelson from Atlanta's Casino and find out what he thinks about the Tigers' chances for 2017. But first, let's round the bases. Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Right after the break.
Fly ball here to center. Way back in center. Deep. Gone! Whoa, man! Straightaway center to the camera well! Three-run shot for Cabrera! As far as you'll see one hit here at Comerica Park, and the Tigers take a 3-0 lead.
And welcome back from the break. I am ready, Rob, to talk baseball here. Just I know baseball isn't technically back yet. It's not even close to being back. They're not even playing games that don't matter yet. It's just guys in a sunny field throwing the ball back and forth and stretching out. But it feels closer now because they are there. The stuff is like it's on Twitter, the bad Periscope videos and Vines and whatever else. So it's like, okay, I can smell it now.
So that means it's back. I would definitely argue that baseball is back.
There are guys on
fields wearing funny uniforms, doing baseball-like things. Baseball is back.
I'm not going to quibble, but let's talk about that for just a second, because how funny is it that they show up to these fields? I've seen the pictures, right? And they're all like in full, Old English D uniform.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, why do you have to do that? You're just going out there to run and stretch and, play catch, and you're the only team out there. So it's not.
Do you think they do it more for appearances, like the first day? Like, were they still wearing the uniforms today, or do they just show up like the first day in uniforms to like get all the pictures and everything?
No, I saw some pictures from today that they were in like looked like their road jerseys, maybe, but they were definitely in uniform. Like, why?
Or do they like pull the awesomeness where they like wear like the pants, but like underneath, like they just have like a sweatshirt or like a t-shirt on or something like that? Just
some running shorts and sandals or whatever. Like,
pretty much.
No one's actually going to be playing today, so. I don't know. Let's talk about what we've found out even since they've gotten there. I know there's some news concerning Drew Verhagen was the name that popped up in my Twitter feed. And it sounds like that they're actually talking about using him, well, the plan maybe anyway, to use him as starter depth. I was surprised to see that he might be going to Toledo to kind of stretch out as a starter there. I first of all, forgot that Drew Verhagen existed. To begin with, but I would have assumed that he'd be more of a bullpen piece going down the stretch.
Yeah, you'd think so, especially with how he performed last year. Like, before he went down with the injury, he was actually pretty good. Mm-hmm. I think he carved up, who was it in the first series? Was it Stanton? Giancarlo Stanton?
That sounds right.
Really kind of carved up during that series, and everyone kind of took notice at that point. Like, wow, you know, this might be a legit asset here. And at first, like, you know, I saw the news and I thought, like, oh, you know, that's just like your typical spring training fodder type thing. Mm-hmm. But now that I think about it, I think it's actually a pretty smart move for the Tigers. Like, you think about how many starters they've used in the last couple years. I did the math last night, and it was, I think, 9 starters in 2016 and then 12 in 2015 when they, you know, there are some trades and whatnot in there. And so that's a little bit of a higher number. But basically, you need anywhere from 8 to 10 starters in a season. And taking both Verhagen and Buck Farmer and putting them kind of in the rotation, at least to start with in spring training, who knows what will happen once they break camp. Maybe they go to the bullpen if they're just looking phenomenal in spring training. But at least to start with, if having those guys there, you have 10 guys that could, you know, you could potentially use as a starter at some point in the season. Now, a lot of those guys like Verhagen and Farmer and Miles J, you don't necessarily want starting, but at least to have that there, I think is important. And it really kind of speaks, you know, I think it speaks well of what Alavila's done over the last couple of years to build some of that depth.
I kind of had to rack my brain a little bit and remember when Verhagen left and what he was doing before that. And the one thing that stuck out in my mind was, you know, he was starting to look like a real weapon out of the bullpen because he had developed that secondary pitch. I think it was a slider that he was throwing that was a real weapon, a real swing and miss pitch. Plus, he was throwing heat, you know, like in the mid to high 90s, and beginning to think like, hey, you could have a guy here that could legitimately be a, you know, seventh inning guy or an eighth inning guy if necessary. So I'm just a little, it's not a bad thing that they're talking about stretching him out as a starter, but I thought they were going a completely different direction. But like you said, there's overflow. So what do you do?
Yeah, and his numbers from last season really don't back that up. He threw 19 innings and his ERA was over 7, but I think a lot of that was from a bad couple of outings towards the end of his season, which was in like early May. You know, he was doing pretty well in through April there. There was just, you know, a couple bad outings, and I think that's really kind of what, you know, one of the bad aspects of using ERA to evaluate a reliever's performance.
Right.
I don't have the advanced numbers in front of me, but at least by the eye test, it seemed like Verhagen was making some steps forward. Like you said, the mid-90s heat, you know, having a lot of downward plane on his fastball too. I know that he put up some really gaudy ground ball numbers in the minor leagues as well. And so it'll be interesting to see how that goes going forward. But even if he is just kind of a depth piece this year, I think that's important. Another aspect that, you know, kind of surprised me, and I don't know if surprise is the right word, but one of the things that kind of came to mind when thinking about both Verhagen and Farmer working as starters is that there's a lot more bullpen depth here.
Yes.
And so the Tigers have a lot of arms available that they can afford to move these guys back into more of a starting role. And, you know, it's not entirely likely that Verhagen or Farmer are just going to blow everyone away and be one of those seven guys they need to bring up first in the bullpen. I think there are, you know, a lot of other guys in the way, especially those without minor league options. And so it'll be interesting to see how all that plays out. I mean, you know, we've read things like Joe Jimenez has been very, very impressive so far. And so I'm interested to see how the bullpen takes shape and, you know, how much they do with Verhagen and Farmer to get them ready as starters this year.
It certainly seems like it's a bit of a crowded bullpen this year. We saw what they had last year. It wasn't a great bullpen, but it was serviceable. I mean, little bumps and bruises aside, like Justin Wilson kind of forgetting how to hit the zone and not, you know.
Shane Green, too.
Yeah, Shane Green had his little issues there. So, but you talk about, you know, you just mentioned Joe Jimenez, and he's already, you know, impressing people in Lakeland, and that will continue. I guarantee you if he gets a couple, you know, outings in spring training, people are going to be talking even more. The hype around this guy is just crazy. You're not going to see him, I don't think, to start the 2017 season, but it just speaks to the fact that, you know, if a need arose, if suddenly we were shorthanded in the bullpen, you do have guys in the minor league system, even someone like Buck Farmer or Drew Verhagen that, you know, they're stretching out as a starter, they can always drop them in later and say, no, pitch out of the bullpen.
Yeah, I mean, they've got, you know, who else? Daniel Stumpf, that minor league guy.
Right.
Or, I mean, the Rule 5 guy, Victor Alcantara, the guy they got back for Cameron Maben, a couple others in Warwick Saupold who we saw last year, a couple minor league signings in Edward Mujica and A.J. Octor. You know, if those guys kind of catch fire a little bit, you had Adam Ravenel, another prospect that is kind of impressed at times. And so there's a lot of guys there. None of them are particularly impressive other than, you know, the Justin Wilsons and Alex Wilsons of the world. But you need that depth throughout the course of a season. I mean, they've used, what, roughly 20 pitchers or so a year. You can't just have seven guys. And so even if you know these guys aren't making the bullpen out of a spring training. I mean, what was it? Angel Nesbitt made the team out of spring training a couple years ago, and so that changes so much over the course of the season. Just to have that quantity of arms there, I think, is important.
Yeah, people forget, I think, throughout the year just how many times the team ends up moving bullpen pieces up and down, you know, back to Toledo, up from Toledo, you know, so on and so forth. And you do need that depth. But you know who is not in the bullpen as of right now is Frankie Rodriguez, our friend K-Rod. What is it with this guy and his visa issues? It's like an every year thing, isn't it?
I think it is an every year thing with him.
Does he just not know when spring training is? Like,
I don't know. I mean, at this point, you know, he probably just, you know, it's a long year. He probably doesn't want to get there quite yet. He's enjoying the nice weather down in Venezuela. And, well, you know, the weather's nice in Florida, too. And so I don't necessarily think that it's nothing to worry about. You know, he's pitching in the World Baseball Classic as well. He'll be ready.
Yeah, these guys don't usually have those kind of problems. It's just amusing to me because I'm envisioning him waking up, you know, like last week and looking at the calendar going, crap, oh, I forgot to get the visa thing straightened out. So,
well, he's a closer. He doesn't have to be ready for the start of the game anyways. Why would he be ready for the start of the season?
He's got to be in a role. He's got to know when to prepare and get ready to be in. So it's really Brad Ausmus's fault for not calling him 2 weeks ago and saying, don't forget to get your visa renewed and straightened out.
You'd think that they'd have someone for that, but who knows?
Leave it to the manager. You left a note here that I'm kind of curious about because I didn't know this had happened. So Jim Leland has told Justin Verlander to skip the World Baseball Classic.
Yeah, I was interested by that. There was an interview, I think it was Chris McCoskey of the Detroit News, had done kind of an interview with Verlander, and he had talked about the World Baseball Classic. And Verlander had said that he wanted to do it, but Jim Leland, you know, he was saying that he was talking to Jim Leland, and he had said, you know, as a manager, I want you there, but you know, as your friend, you know, you've had this great season in 2016 and you're coming off a great year. You're finally healthy and you shouldn't jeopardize that. And I thought that was very interesting to see Leland say that, especially when he has kind of a vested interest and in actually winning the World Baseball Classic. But it also kind of goes to show the kind of the difference that, you know, we have as Americans compared to some of these other countries, like, you know, the Latin American countries like Venezuela and Puerto Rico and the Dominican Republic, they take the World Baseball Classic very, very seriously.
Yeah.
And so it's a little bit of a contrast to see, like, think about how stacked that U.S. roster would be if they had Mike Trout and Bryce Harper and Clayton Kershaw and Justin Verlander. Like, it would be a little unfair. And so it was interesting to see that, but also kind of interesting to see Leland, you know, take Verlander's side more from a personal standpoint rather than saying, oh, yeah, you know, we could really use you even for a couple innings as a pitcher in the World Baseball Classic.
Yeah, kind of like you said, it speaks to how even Jim Leland himself views the importance of the World Baseball Classic versus the importance of his former team, the Tigers, you know, having a good year. And yeah, that is very interesting that he would take that kind of personal interest and say, hey, maybe not the best idea. You talk about a stacked team, though. I mean, Max Scherzer was supposed to be on that same team before I think he hurt his finger or something and can't pitch. But my goodness, yeah, that would have been an extremely stacked roster. Of course, all the really good like hitters like Cabrera and Martinez and so forth, they're all on like the Venezuelan team. So it's
Well, Michael Fulmer is on the roster.
That's right.
Listed on the roster. And Alex Wilson.
He made it too, didn't he? That's right.
Yeah, Alex Wilson did. I was interested by that. That's a pretty cool pick.
So now I should probably just like look at the schedule and see how this all shakes out. But doesn't the World Baseball Classic start like early March? Like it kind of interrupts spring training a little bit?
Yeah, it's kind of in the middle. It's really in like a 3 week period, I think, like March like 7th or 8th or something like that. And I think the final is on the 22nd.
So somewhere. All of these players on the Tigers roster, they're going to go for a couple weeks of spring training and then a bunch of them are going to leave to go play in the World Baseball Classic. So essentially spring training is going to be like, you know, not half the team, but not full strength.
Yeah. And you kind of wonder if this is part of the reason why they're moving Verhagen and Farmer into to rotation during spring training.
Yeah.
They've already said they want to kind of limit Michael Fulmer a little bit. You imagine they probably want to do the same with Daniel Norris and Matt Boyd. And so just eating some of those innings, I think is going to be important for them through spring. And they have plenty of minor leaguers that can do that too. I almost kind of feel bad for some of the people that bought like tickets for like mid-March.
Right.
Whatever already. Like, sorry, guys, you get to watch, you know, Joe Schmo minor leaguer instead.
You're going to miss Cabrera. You're going to miss Victor Martinez. You're going to miss all these great players that are going to be, I think, wasn't Francisco Rodriguez, you said, also playing in the Joe Jimenez. Did he make it? I think he did.
Yep. He's on the Puerto Rican roster.
Man, spring training is going to be weird this year. I like to watch the games or listen to the games when they're happening. Mm-hmm. So it's just going to be odd that none of those guys will be there. Ian Kinsler, I think, is another one that's going to be on the American team.
Yep. It's almost a little bit more interesting this way. For one, because I think you get a little bit more high-intensity baseball in the World Baseball Classic. The games actually matter, and so teams are, you know, trying a little bit harder. But also, during spring training, you get, I think, more looks at minor leaguers with this, like, especially as more games get televised in later March. Usually it's more veterans playing longer innings by that point. Usually they're, you know, playing 6, 7, 8 innings as they're getting ramped up towards the season. But if those guys are still coming off of the World Baseball Classic, then you'll get more looks at some of these minor leaguers. And I think that's more one of the more exciting parts of spring, rather than watch Cabrera get ready for the year and spray the ball the other way. We get to watch him all year. It's nice to watch the minor league guys.
So basically, March spring training is going to be a lot of Omar Infante at second base and Stephen Moya in right field and Michael Gerber. Hey, more Michael Gerber is not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? Let's talk about projections real quick here, because we touched on this a little bit last week, but some of the other numbers have come out. We talked about Pecota. They had the Tigers at 77 or 78 wins. FanGraphs has them pegged to 82 wins. USA Today put them at 85. And Atlantis Casino just released their win totals. They had the Tigers at 85.5. We'll be talking with their sportsbook director later in the show about why he put them at 85.5. That's kind of a range, 78 at the bottom end, 85.5, 86 at the top end. I mean, where do you kind of start to sort this out and say, okay, who's closest to being right?
Well, as far as closest to being right, I do kind of tend to side with Vegas more than anything, because they are quite literally putting their money where their mouth is with this. And, you know, with the projection systems, it is based on a computer formula, and there are tweaks that happen from time to time, but there are, you know, certain things you can point to, you know, kind of figure out why it is that they're projecting the team this way. The Tigers have, you know, kind of a veteran core, and so the computer projections are projecting, you know, a fair amount of age-related decline with them. And so we've seen so far with guys like Cabrera and Ian Kinsler and Justin Verlander, they're not exactly complying with those, you know, kind of age-related norms where guys tend to fall off, especially as they get into their mid-30s. Now, hopefully that continues in 2017, but we'll see kind of how that plays out. The projections also don't really plan for like big breakouts like we saw with JD Martinez. Like, Pecota still projects JD Martinez the same way that it did like 2 years ago.
Wow.
It really hasn't adjusted yet, because I think they take like the previous 5 years of data, and you think it would uptick a little bit, but it really hasn't yet. And that's kind of surprising. Nick Castellanos is another one that it hasn't really caught up with yet. It's very, very down on Michael Fulmer so far too. Kind of taking a look at some of the numbers there. And I imagine that the FanGraphs projections are kind of the same way, and that they're a little bit slow to adjust with that. The last couple of years, the Tigers have also outperformed their Pythagorean win-loss record. I think last year, I'm taking a look now, they were supposed to only win 83 games. And so I think that that's part of the reason, just kind of their run differential of not scoring too many more runs than they're allowing, I think is another big reason why the projections are kind of down on them. But I think that Vegas and others see it a little bit differently. And the USA Today just makes it up as they go.
Well, true enough. But the funny thing is looking over those numbers, and I'm looking at USA Today's, you know, trying to project the standings at the end and all of that. And I'm looking at what they had in the Central: Cleveland, then Detroit, then Kansas City, then Chicago, you know, the White Sox, and then the Twins. And I thought, that's probably right. I mean, that's probably as close to being right. So, you know, yeah, it's USA Today, but for once, they didn't have like this crazy setup. Like, wasn't it last year they thought the White Sox were going to win the division? I think they had them projected to win.
Yeah, I think they did, and that definitely didn't happen. No, it seemed like this year USA Today's projections were like basically what happened last year.
Yeah, and it seems a little more reasonable, honestly. I mean, I might quibble over whether Kansas City takes third place or whether the Twins do. I don't know, but I think it's obvious that Cleveland and Detroit are the top two.
Yeah.
Where exactly in the top two, you know, whether Detroit manages to beat them out or not is an open question. And as you're talking about, you know, the way Pecota looks at Michael Fulmer or JD Martinez, it occurs to me that there really are question marks all around the roster. I mean, there's question marks over the offense. You know, can Castellanos continue having a breakout, you know, and really hit it hard next year, or this year rather? Justin Upton, you know, is he going to kind of settle in and have a little bit more productive, more consistently productive season, as opposed to just doing it in the last month of the year?
Yeah.
So the offense has certain questions around it, but certainly the pitching staff does. You don't know if this is the year that Daniel Norris really breaks out or if Justin Verlander repeats what he did last year. It's like all the pieces are there for this team to just walk and stomp over everybody. Yep. And there's also the complete and total possibility that they just collapse.
Yeah, and they're, you know, injury concerns as well. I mean, none of these guys really have, other than Zimmerman last year, it's not like a huge injury risk, I'd say, other than the fact that they're throwing a ball 95-plus miles an hour, and that inherently causes a little bit more injury risk. We already saw it with, I believe it was Alex Reyes of the St. Louis Cardinals. He's, you know, done for the year with Tommy John surgery. And so there's always a risk for that, and hopefully the news stays relatively quiet down in Lakeland, and the Tigers don't necessarily have any box jump calamities or anything like that last year, like last year.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pessimistic on Zimmerman because I don't think he's healthy. I don't think he's fully recovered. And I'm pessimistic on Victor Martinez because the guy has, you know, two blown out knees and now a hernia to go with that.
Yeah.
So it's like, man, if you can even put 40 games in, we'll be happy. But, you know, outside of that, I expect some good things out of the kids and the pitching staff. You know, I think Daniel Norris will have a good year. I think Fulmer's going to have a good year. But I don't know. When I look at these numbers, the projections from, you know, Atlantis, from USA Today, whatever, I think I almost want to play it more pessimistic and say, look, they could. Yes, they could just stomp over everybody. That's completely possible. I would not be surprised. But how likely is that to happen? And I think maybe 88 is kind of where I think they'll end up falling.
Yeah, I think I said, what, 87 last week or something like that?
So.
Somewhere in that neighborhood. And I think that's kind of closer to where they're falling as well. I definitely think Pecota is a little bit too pessimistic on all of that. And Fangraphs, it seems like they just kind of group everyone together. I think there were like 7 or 8 teams in the American League between like 81 and 84 wins in their projections. And so they're really just kind of pushing everyone towards the middle. And so, you know, some of these, you could take them with a little bit of a grain of salt. And so there are ways to pick up part of the projections. There are ways to pick apart Vegas's numbers as well. But, you know, with, as far as if I'm going to take one, I'm going to take Vegas because the money truly is kind of what they were going after there.
Yeah, I would agree with that. An 85.5, you know, I'd probably take the over, but not by much. I know when they set those numbers,
it makes you think.
Yeah.
Their numbers definitely make you think.
Last year they set the number at 85 and the Tigers won 86, so it was basically spot on. Now they missed on a bunch of other, you know, areas. The Cubs is, you know, an area where that particular sports book missed pretty badly by about, I don't know, 8 or 9, 10 wins, something like that. It can happen, but on the whole, I think it's pretty accurate. Like you said, they got to make money off of this, so they're not just going to run off willy-nilly, you know, and not make the adjustments. But really, I mean, to me, it says, okay, if the Tigers can win 88, 89, maybe push it and win 90. Cleveland's certainly going to be in that same, you know, 89, 90, 91, somewhere in there. And really, to me, it's like it comes down to how well can the Tigers absolutely beat up on the Central? Because outside of the Indians, I think they can easily handle the White Sox, the Twins.
Yep.
These are all weakened teams. It's just going to be basically the Tigers and the Indians feasting as hard as they can on the AL Central and then hope the rest of the games against MLB teams, you know, you want to break 500, maybe a little above. So really what I'm saying is it comes down to how well are they going to play the Indians.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's that. It's against the rest of the division as well. You know, you point to the Tigers going, what was it, 4-14 against the Indians last year. You know, and that's unsustainable. But you can also take a look at their record against the Twins last year. I think they were 15-4 against Minnesota last year, and that's probably a little bit unsustainable as well. I mean, if they could pick up 12, 13 wins against some of these bottom feeders like the White Sox, who I think are, you know, may end up getting a little bit worse throughout the year, especially if they trade someone like Jose Quintana. You know, if they can pick up some of those wins against these lower level teams, even maybe overperform a little bit against someone like the Royals or the Twins, that gives them a good leg up. And hopefully they can kind of even things up against Cleveland this year and put themselves back in the hunt.
Yeah, I would be comfortable saying they're a good shot for the wild card. I think they can win the division, but I'm not ready to say that's a certainty, you know, or even a probability. All right, moving on from that. Mike Ilitch has passed, and I don't know where you were when you got the news. I think I was at home on Friday night cooking a Valentine's dinner for my wife, and she's the one that saw it on Twitter, and I just I was shocked. I mean, I shouldn't have been shocked. We've seen this coming for a long time, but it was just like, you know, it's funny, Rob, the first feeling that I felt was I said, shit, he never got his ring.
Yeah.
You know, that was the
really is the thing.
first thing right off the bat. And then I thought, and I ended up putting it on Twitter after I thought this through and said, you know, that may have been his ultimate goal, taking home the ring. But the fact of the matter is he gave Detroit Tiger fans relevant sports for like, what, 10, how many years, you know, from 2006 up until even, I'd say even now, it's still, we're still talking about them being in the playoff hunt.
Mm-hmm.
That is like, that's worth so much to me, I think.
Yeah. And he gave, you know, the Detroit Red Wings fans even longer of a stretch. I mean, yes. They're on what was a 24, 25 straight consecutive playoff appearances or something like that. You know, unfortunately, it looks like that streak's going to end this year. But I mean, they've been almost as long as I've been alive, they've been in the playoffs, which is just crazy to think about. And then just the things that he's done for the city of Detroit. You know, he invested in the city when no one else wanted to, just kind of during its lowest point. I've been reading stories like that. He paid Rosa Parks rent for a while. You know, just some of those incredible things. He restored, I think, the Fox Theater across from Comerica Park and a number of different things. You know, and it just kind of goes to show that, you know, he was more than just an owner. He really invested in the city itself, and I think that's special.
And the players all have been speaking very highly of him, you know, and I think that's another thing I pointed out on Twitter, that simultaneous with this news of Mike Ilitch passing is the fact that Jeffrey Loria is selling the Marlins. And the contrast just jumped out at me watching the timeline on Twitter and Facebook or whatever. All these Marlins fans are like, finally, get that lousy owner out of here. And all Detroit fans are like, oh, you know, I thought it's you can't take that for granted. You cannot take it for granted that you're going to have a good owner. And no. We did for a long time.
I mean, the Tigers have had their share of crappy owners throughout the years. I mean, I'm blinking on the guy who was the owner before Ilitch. You know, that wasn't really kind of during my biggest part of fandom. I mean, Ilitch bought the team when I was, you know, still just a kid. But I'm totally blanking on his name.
Tom Monahan owned them.
Yes. I think that he was the one that kind of people had, you know, kind of bemoaned a little bit while he was owner. And there are others throughout history that, you know, other Tigers owners that, you know, fans have kind of bitched and moaned about. It really just kind of goes to show, I think, that the way the players speak of Mike Ilitch, it just speaks volumes, really. I mean, do you see anywhere else in sports where people truly talk about their owner the way that these Tigers players have?
No, I think it was obviously very personal for a lot of them. You know, he was never shy about opening the wallet, you know, and paying big money for guys like Cabrera and taking care of Justin Verlander and making sure he gets to play out his days as a Tiger. Even Victor Martinez, we still say that's probably not the greatest contract, but it came from a good place. You know, him saying, Mr. Ilitch saying, I'm going to make sure you're taken care of. And, you know, that might be a valid criticism of the years that he owned the team. It's kind of like, I think he overspent sometimes, but better that than to be, you know, just not really invested, you know, and whatever, the team is crap. You know how we talk about the hypothetical? What would you rather have in a 10-year span? A team that wins a World Series once and then is irrelevant for the other 9 years, or a team that stays relevant all 10 years but never gets the World Series? And Tom Monahan, who owned the team prior to Ilitch, is exactly that person. He got them the World Series in 84, but that was that was it. You know, and so many years of irrelevance after that. Who do you prefer, Monahan or Ilitch? And it's like, huh?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it is unfortunate that they never were able to get Ilitch the ring that he wanted. But you know, this team has been relevant. They've been to the World Series a couple times. They've had, you know, countless, you know, unforgettable moments, playoff moments, and it's really been special to watch this team over the last decade or so. And hopefully, that continues going forward.
You know, in a year when he passes, and that was the big thing, is get the ring. Can we get the ring? You know, I don't know how much stock you put in kind of the ulterior motivations, you know, of a team, but I'm sure they're all gunning for it this year, you know, to say, let's win it now. Let's win it this year for Mr. I. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know how much that plays into how well they end up, you know, performing. You can only play as good as you can play. I wonder if that's not something kind of in the back of their minds.
Yeah, you would hope so. I mean, a number of teams will have things to play for throughout any given season. And I know the Royals will be saying the same thing about Yordano Ventura coming up this year. And so, you know, hopefully it plays out that way and the Tigers do get their storybook ending. But, you know, if not, it's not necessarily for a lack of effort.
And, of course, the big question or questions, I think, that's on a lot of fans' minds right now, you know, is kind of what happens to the team next. And some people might feel like, well, you know, you can't talk about that now. The guy just passed away. And I kind of feel like, well, yeah, but at the same time, we only knew Mike Ilitch in the context of the owner of the Detroit Tigers. You know, that is kind of the central connection point between us. So it is, I think, very relevant to start talking about, you know, now that he's gone, we can look back on the good times, but the question's there. You know, and the rumor mill has already started churning, you know, that...
I mean, it was starting even before he had passed away.
Yes, yes. But now that it's happened, you know, there's already stuff on Twitter I see. It's like, no, the Tigers are going to be sold, you know, within the next 2 years, you know, or the next 3 years or whatever. And I kind of think, I don't know about that.
I'm not sure about that either. It seems like the Ilitch family still wants to hold on to the team. You know, we haven't seen much of Chris Ilitch, but the fact that he's taking over as president of the team, I think speaks a little bit about what his plans are going forward. I don't necessarily know that he would have taken that position if he just planned on selling the team as soon as his dad passed away. And so we'll see what happens with that. You know, they've talked about lowering the budget a little bit, which I think is understandable, especially if they're kind of looking to build more of a long-term winner. But it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to take it down to a shoestring budget. They may keep it, you know, relatively competitive and even higher than some of the other teams in the division. The Tigers, especially now, I think they're angling towards, you know, a new TV contract coming up in the next year or two. And if that plays out the way that they hope, you know, and they get kind of that big money deal, maybe they're able to kind of continue investing in the team a little bit. And so we'll see what happens with that. But I don't necessarily know that this, you know, means a sale is inevitable by any means.
No, I would think that would come down to less of an issue of money, because like you said, there's a new TV contract coming that's going to be worth billions. You talk about the luxury tax, you know, being lifted or at least being relaxed a little bit. So that's not going to be as big of an issue. I think it's really going to come down to whether Chris Ilitch is interested, you know, is interested in continuing to run the Tigers. And that, I can't say. That would just be pure speculation, and I have no idea. Never met the man, never talked to him, don't know anybody who has. So it's,
I think, and like I said, the only thing we can really speculate on is the fact that he took over as president of the team, and it seems, at least publicly, that indicates a certain level of interest.
And don't you kind of feel like the whole push, even a little bit last year, more so this year, but with Al Avila talking more about let's cut the budget a little bit, let's focus on building the farm system, let's talk about not spending above our means, as the way he put it. I kind of feel like that was going to happen no matter what. Even if Mr. Ilitch had lived another 5 years, I felt like Al Avila's got this mindset that he wants to do this regardless of what ownership wants to do.
Yeah, I think so. You know, especially in this day and age, you can't build a team with free agents. Even in the last maybe 5 years or so, I think that the aging curve has really kind of changed dramatically. The way that teams value their young players and their prospects and their cost control talent, that's all changed so much that, you know, these days you can't just, you know, buy your way to a championship. Those days of George Steinbrenner doing that with the Yankees are over, and you have to be able to build from within. You have to be able to build up your farm system and get this cost control talent and develop guys. And that's really the only way you're going to win these days. And I think that the Tigers, you know, it took them a little while, but I think they finally realized that.
So I guess it remains to be seen. I'm not going to worry about it. In the meantime, I guess it was today. Today's Wednesday. There was a public viewing at Fox Theater. Mm-hmm. I didn't hear if anybody that I knew personally was able to make it over to that. But I'm sure there will be different, what do you call, memorial type things throughout the year. Mm-hmm. Patches on the arm, and maybe they'll build a statue of him, you know, in Comerica Park.
I think they should name the field after him.
Why
Mike Ilitch, Mike Ilitch Field at Comerica Park?
But nobody does that anymore. Everyone goes for the corporate sponsorships, you know, Safeco Field and Petco Park and Comerica Park, you know. Mm-hmm. That would be a huge break with the current.
Yeah, I mean, and they're like some of the smaller things, like the booth, I think, is named after Ernie Harwell and stuff. And so you can still do things like that. And especially if the Ilitch family continues to own the team, who's stopping them from naming the park or naming the field after him, as long as you maintain the, you know, the park sponsorship.
I'm all for it. That would be a really cool thing to do.
I think it would be cool.
Name it Mike Ilitch Park. I would be all for
it. Did you see the Chevrolet tribute to him?
No, I didn't.
Oh, that was cool. It's an ad that they put, or not an ad, but like, you know, an image that they had posted on the internet. And it says, you know, just black, you know, like a black screen and then white lettering. It says Detroit, but the I is missing.
No.
And it says, Mr. I, you will be missed.
Wow.
Very cool.
That's very effective, actually, right there. And that's, you know, as we're talking about naming the park after him, that's another aspect that I tend to forget happened, that he's the one that was behind, you know, doing away with Tiger Stadium and building that brand new park. You talk about, like, that's a huge step forward. I love Tiger Stadium, don't get me wrong, but it was time. It was time to get a better
Same facility. Thing with Jolo Serena. You know, people love it, but it's time.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll leave that there. Rest in peace, Mr. Illich. Thanks for all the good summers. And we'll take a quick break, come back with Warming in the Pen. We'll talk about who is the weakest division right after the break.
Sanchez looks in and gets the sign from Brian Pena. Pena setting up away. The 2-2. Swing! Wow. Miss! He got him on strikes! A new club record!
What a
17
wow.
strikeouts by Aníbal Sanchez! And he strikes out the side in the eighth.
And we are back with our Warming in the Pen segment. It's time to kind of look around the other teams, the other divisions, the other league, and decide, Rob, which is the weakest division. And it's not even really no contest at this point. Let's just start with talking about the Kansas City Royals. They have made a couple of moves, I think, to try to better themselves. You talk about the fact that they signed Jason Hamill and Travis Wood. They got Brandon Moss. Is it really going to be enough, though, to get them over the 500 mark?
We'll see on that. You know, the rotation, even with Hamill and Travis Wood, I feel like there was another pitcher in there that I had forgotten to write about in the notes. But you know, they just don't, I don't think they have the pitching to do it. Their rotation really struggled last year, and now, you know, they are out. Unfortunately, they don't have Yordano Ventura around anymore. And so between that and, you know, the bullpen has fallen off a little bit. Greg Holland's not there anymore. Wade Davis is gone. They lost, their left-hander, Brian Flynn. Did you see this?
Yes.
They lost Brian Flynn because he fell through the roof of his barn.
Of a barn.
You know, just a, you know, just a terribly unlucky offseason for the Royals.
As one does. One falls through the barn frequently. It mm-hmm. happens in the offseason. You know, I had completely forgotten until the other day reading up on what they were up to in the offseason. And aside from the horrible loss of Yordano Ventura, I completely forgot that they traded Edison Volquez.
Yep. Traded away left. Wade Davis.
Yes. That bullpen is now like, it's Kelvin Herrera and Joaquin Soria.
Yeah. And so not much there. And we'll see how that plays out. But, you know, I still don't necessarily know that they've done enough to, you know, make up for what they've lost.
I think they finished dead even, right? 81-81 last year. I think they were straight 500, maybe one or two games above or below. But that's about where I would peg them again to start, you know, the 2017 season. If they can clear 500, they're doing a good job. But I don't think they'll get much beyond that.
No. And I was reading this article the other day on Royals Review. It says, is this the best starting rotation Dayton Moore has ever built? And you think about it and you're like, really, you know, is it? But then you start looking at some of the other rotations they've had over the years and they are terrible.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's, you know, it's not exactly the best compliment to have, but, I think the highest, WAR total, wins above replacement has only been like 8 wins above replacement, which like Verlander has almost done himself a couple times.
Right. No, and you look back at their rotations, I mean, we've said this last week, it makes total sense why a system like Pecota, which is based on starting pitching, has always hated them. It's never put them near the top. And it's because their starting rotations have never been great. They've always won on speed, on defense, on ridiculously good bullpen. Now you talk about some of those things falling apart a little bit. Gerard Dyson is no longer even with the team. So that's, they kind of dealt away some of the pieces that made them who they were.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Going back to this article, in 2013, the Royals rotation was worth 8.6 wins above replacement. Max Scherzer was worth 6.1 wins above replacement on his own. But yeah, no, getting back to the Royals, I don't necessarily know that the depth is there anymore. You know, they've lost a few guys, you know, taking a look, just kind of going around the diamond a little bit. Catcher Salvador Perez has declined a little bit. You know, they'll be solid in the corners with Eric Hosmer and Mike Moustakas. But, you know, you look at, you know, can Lorenzo Cain stay healthy? He's had injury issues throughout his career at times. Gerard Dyson is gone, so the depth isn't really there. Second base is, you know, still kind of a black hole for them. You know, they didn't get much better than Omar Infante last year. And so we'll see exactly how that plays out with them. They have a couple, you know, decent-ish players there, but no one that's really going to wow you. And so there's a lot to be desired from, especially on both sides of the ball, really, with them.
And we've already touched on this, I think, you know, in weeks past, just the fact that the Chicago White Sox are in full rebuild mode. They are probably going to be out of the running by, you know, by the trade deadline, you know, in July or August, and probably will get worse. They will probably get rid of some other pieces before they start to get better. I'm not sure if they're going to drop dead last. It's funny that USA Today has the Minnesota Twins coming in dead last with only 66 wins. That's like second worst in all of baseball. But yeah, the White Sox just don't strike me as any kind of real.
I mean, no, and I honestly, I would probably project them to be last. You know, they could potentially trade Jose Quintana this year. You know, James Shields, if he has a hot start, he may be on the trade block. You think Todd Frazier will probably be gone at some point. There's probably a guy or two there that I'm missing. And so there's a lot, you know, that could be gone. David Robertson, their closer, is, you know, I would probably bet that he's going to end up with the Nationals by the end of spring training. They've already had talks a little bit. And so it seems like a fair bet that he will end up out of the organization in the not too distant future. And then Minnesota has, you know, a couple of young, decent young guys. Byron Buxton had a really good September. Miguel Sano is apparently in a little bit better shape after some concerns about that last year. I think he's going to be back at his old position at third base. They're not doing the weird thing that they did last year, but they put him in right field. Mm-hmm. And so maybe that kind of picks up his bat a little bit. And, you know, we'll see what happens on the pitching side with them. But there's a little bit of optimism to be found there that I don't necessarily think you see in Chicago.
So, yeah, basically what we're saying is, again, it comes down to this AL Central division is just kind of not really a good division. It's the Tigers and it's the Indians. It's the Tigers coming back into to 2017 with the same basic roster as last year. The Indians had to do a little bit of juggling. They lost Rajay Davis. They lost, Mike Napoli.
Mike Napoli. I mean, they replaced him with Edwin Encarnacion, so I think they'll be fine there.
Oh, how much are you looking forward to that, to facing Edwin Encarnacion some 17, 18, 19 times games?
Yeah, not so much.
Do you remember, like, whenever the Blue Jays would come to town, that was always the thing. Like, oh, got to deal with that. You know?
Yeah, him and Bautista and some of the other guys.
Donaldson,
and,
you know. Encarnacion was always a legit home run threat. Didn't he hit, like, 40-plus last year? I think he did. Mm.
Yep.
The only saving grace in that is that we get to watch him walk the parrot a lot more often.
Uh-huh.
The walking the parrot, right?
I mean, you know, hopefully he can do it against other teams and not us, but we'll see.
Well, no, I'm just saying, if he's going to do it against our team, which he will, at least you have that nice little, you know, entertainment to go with. It's so funny. It's a personal thing for me because I told my wife about it, and we hardly ever got to watch the Blue Jays play the Tigers, but I would see the Jays play other teams. I would watch on MLB TV, and I would always tell her about this. Yeah, he does this weird thing when he hits the home run. He runs with his arm half cocked up, and it looks like he's got a parrot. They call it walking the parrot. And she never got to see it. Anytime we watched them play the Jays, you know, he didn't hit the home run, or then like the next night she wasn't able to watch and hit like three in one game. I'm like, are you serious?
So what you're saying is she needs to watch all of the Tigers-Indians games this year.
I'm not sure that's going to make a damn bit of difference, but yeah, we can try that. I'm like, well, at least you're going to get to see him walk the parrot for whatever that's worth. News about Michael Brantley. Is he going to even really be, like, ready?
It sounds like a big problem. I haven't looked too far into it yet, but it sounds like he's not even going to be, like, fully swinging a bat to start the year. And so he's probably going to start the year on the disabled list. It's a little bit unfortunate. You got to kind of wonder whether he's ever going to really make it back. Hmm. You know, reading into kind of the history of some of these guys that have had shoulder labrum surgeries, it's not good for position players who have to swing quite a bit. And so it's, you know, hopefully he can, you know, for his sake, hopefully he can make it back. But it really does seem like a big problem for them. And, you know, from what we heard last year, you know, originally they had said he's going to be fine to start the year. And then, you know, he comes back and hits like, you know, 700 against the Tigers for a week and a half, but otherwise didn't really do much. Yeah, I think he only played like 15 games last year, and we'll see what happens. I'm reading Let's Go Tribe right now, the Indians SB Nation site, and they say the best case scenario is, you know, him still starting the year on the disabled list and returning by like mid-May or June.
Wow.
I mean, that's so
nearly
that's
halfway through if you're into June, you know, depending.
Yeah.
On how
and they're thinking like most likely scenario was probably, you know, later in the summer him rejoining the team. So that's, you know, a huge loss for them.
Well, somehow they did it without him last year. I don't know how much more depth they have. I know Tyler Naquin had a nice year last year. They're hoping he can repeat that. But, you know, you kind of need Brantley, I feel like. I mean, defensively, he was, I think, an asset to them. Certainly offensively, he always, you know, bothered us Tigers fans all the time.
Uh-huh. I mean, yeah, they really do. I mean, they had kind of, you know, Tyler Naquin, Rajay Davis come out of nowhere last year. But, you know, you have Davis is gone. And I don't even know. I honestly don't even know who's going to play the outfield for them right now. Naquin's probably in center. You know, going around the diamond, maybe someone like Brandon Guider, who doesn't really, you know, make any waves, could be in left. I know they have a good prospect, Bradley Zimmer, who might be ready at some point. I don't necessarily know that he'll start the season in Cleveland, but he could be around by, you know, midsummer or something like that. And so it's a little bit of a question mark. They talked about putting Carlos Santana out there more, which, you know, I'll take that, but I don't think the Indians fans would.
Well, you know the way Terry Francona is and the pixie dust that team has around them. What's going to happen is Andrew Miller is going to end up playing left field, and he's going to be awesome at it for some reason. And then they'll just let him come in and pitch, you know, when he's done playing in left. And since nobody hits the ball when he pitches, you can do without that space in the outfield.
Yeah, I mean, well, they did that with in Lonnie Chisenhall. He just kind of came out of nowhere and was an amazing right fielder. And so who knows?
Who knows, indeed. The Central is, though, I think, easily the weakest division. As I look up and down the lists, you know, and say the AL East is going to be, that's going to be a tough division. Boston's clearly the favorite there, but Toronto's nothing to, you know, sniff at. And Baltimore, I think, even the Yankees made some moves that
they've got some good young players. They could be, you know, potentially another good team. They have, again, just, you know, kind of a monster bullpen that could lock down games for them. And if they're able to shorten games, they could find themselves in the hunt. And who knows, even the Rays might come out of nowhere and kind of surprise people. You know, they have the pitching there. It's all, you know, usually with them about the offense.
Yeah. Especially you think about how close the Yankees came even last year to taking a, you know, wild card spot. It wasn't especially close, but they were in the conversation right up until the end. And it was like, wow, they
sold at the deadline.
Right. They sold and they still, you know, came really, really close. So it's like, man, that could be, the AL East is going to be tough. The AL West, even more so. They are just, Texas is always going to be a threat, I think. Houston, a threat. Seattle made some really nice moves.
Yep.
To put themselves
they
in the conversation.
They picked up Jerod Dyson. I think that was a good pickup for them. It seems like they really kind of tried to go almost the Royals route and really try to improve their outfield defense. Yes, Smiley's out there now. They're definitely going to be the kind of my favorite team to watch on the West Coast as far as you know, like MLB TV team to watch now that Vin Scully's gone, got to pick a new one. And so, but the Dodgers are still going to be fun, but no, the Mariners are interesting. You'd mentioned the Astros, the Rangers are good. Even the Angels might be, you know, kind of good heading into this year. The poor A's, I think the A's might end up having the worst record in baseball just because they have to play all these damn games against good teams.
Yeah. Yeah. The West is shaping up really, not just the American League, the National League, of course, the Dodgers are looking, I know a lot of the, sports books in terms of placing like World Series odds, the Dodgers are right up there to win the NL West, you know. And I know San Francisco has put together a good team last year. They got into the playoffs, but even the Rockies made some decent additions.
A lot of people have said that their moves don't really make sense. Like signing Ian Desmond to play first base seems a little bit weird, but you know, this could be a team that, you know, if they find enough pitching from wherever it is, whether it's the guys in their farm system or anywhere else, you know, they're definitely going to have the offense to contend. For them, it's just all about pitching.
It's strange. Some of these teams that you've always kind of just treated as last place, you know, they're not really going to do anything. And now they're starting to make some moves and, I don't know. So the Central is definitely, I think, the weakest link in that. In a sense, that bodes well for the Tigers because they didn't do anything super special in the offseason. They are rolling forward with the same exact roster, basically. It helps to have them playing so many games in such a weak division. That is going to be their saving grace, I think.
Yep. If they can beat up on the Royals, White Sox, and Twins, I think they got a shot.
And just at least break 500 with the Indians. Mm-hmm. You know, don't go 4-14. Again, that would just be... I can't do that 2 years in a row, man. I can't do it. All right, let's wrap it up there. We'll take a quick break, come back with your listener questions for our End of the Mob Scene at Home segment, mostly talking about beer and tourism, right after the break.
Swinging a fly ball to left field. This one's deep, going back, Gentry at the fence. It's gone! Wow. It's gone! A walk-off grand slam in the bottom of the ninth for Rosie Davis! Incredible! Around third, into the mob, skid it home!
And into the mob scene at home we go, the part of the show where we take questions from our listeners. We got some questions this week. I feel like people are just like maybe taking a week off before spring training games start. We got a
Could
few.
Be. Yeah.
Of course, you can reach us at VOTT Podcast on Twitter. That's where we field all the questions. But we got some interesting ones here. This is first one from David Bratz says, I'm taking my son to his first game at Joe Louis Arena February 21st before it's gone. What is the one Tiger thing to do with my boys before it's too late?
I mean, besides like go to a game itself, I would say probably head down to spring training. You know, they just renovated Joker Marchant Stadium. I don't know how much they've renovated as far as like the actual seating area. It seems like most of the stuff they did was like to the clubhouse and the other facilities and whatnot. But I think just kind of that, you know, pilgrimage to Florida for spring training is kind of one of those things that, you know, is good. I was able to get to Tiger Stadium the last year that it was in existence, and that was really cool to be able to see that kind of come out, see quite literally the greenest grass you're ever going to see in that stadium. I still, you know, just kind of remember that coming out of those tunnels to see that there.
You talk about the grass. It was the seats for me. It was always those bright orange and blue seats. I could not believe how brightly orange and blue they were. And so you come out of that dark tunnel like, oh my goodness, this is awesome.
Yeah, and then even being in the upper deck, I mean, you're still right on top of the action there. Yeah. It's a lot different than Comerica Park right now. I'm not as much of a fan of those open concourses because you don't get that moment where you kind of walk out and then the field just kind of comes into view like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you have to come in through center field, the center field gates, and then you get a little bit of that experience, but it's not. It's not totally the same thing.
Yeah.
This is a really good question. You know, what's the one Tiger thing to do? I know there was a whole book. It's in my shelf. I haven't looked at it in a long time. Terry Foster wrote it called 100 Things Tigers Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. And I don't know, David, if you're talking about, I don't know how old your boys are. Like one of the things I still want to do is get over to Chelly's and try to watch a game from the roof up there. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure kids would be into doing that, but... definitely, you know, I think you have to get to a game at Comerica and go early enough that you can get in and catch some of batting practice. I think that's a lot of fun. My son loves to do that. Loves to go hang out in left field, you know, home run territory and try to catch a batting practice home run. That kind of thing is, you know, is always good. The other thing that I would say you have to do is try to get to the old Tiger Stadium. I know they're, you know, hot and heavy into the renovations now, but, still, you know, at least do the drive by, I don't know. Here's a fun question. Justin Hines, at DC Enigma on Twitter says, so you have to make a spring IPA and name it after a player. Who and what would the name be?
I have no idea. I'm going to let you take this one first since you've probably actually thought about it for a moment.
I did, but then I like quickly discarded the thought because I'm like, I don't know if I can name one after a player, right? Like IPA, they always have a lot of hops, right? So I would go with a baseball theme like, you know, one chop hop, you know, or one hopper to the mound.
Yeah.
And then I thought, well, okay, you also have the initials IPA, and IP also can stand for innings pitched, so I don't know if you like extra IP, IPA, I don't know. But neither of that is, those choices is named after a player, so I'm like totally like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, you kind of mentioned hops, and the thing I think of would be like a crow hop from the outfield, and so I remember that Curtis Granderson always had that big one after he'd catch a fly ball, so... You know, I'm going to go past and say Curtis Granderson's IPA, but who knows?
Curtis Granderson's Crow Hop IPA.
Yeah, there we go.
Or Jose Iglesias One Chop Hop, you know, type thing.
Mm-hmm.
What a strange question. I like it. All right, goggles on. Who would you trust the most on the mound in, with playoff implications? So playoffs on the line. Sanchez, Pelfrey, Lowe, or Romine?
As much as I want to say Andrew Romine, I think it has to be Anibal Sanchez here because, you know, Pelfrey and Lowe, they, you know, they've kind of just been up and down, but mostly down throughout their careers. Whereas Sanchez, even in his struggling 2015 and 2016 seasons, he's had those moments of brilliance. He's had those starts where he just kind of comes out and you think that everything is back. And so at least, you know, with playoff implications on the, you know, kind of on the docket there, there might be a chance that Sanchez comes out and pitches well and they, you know, get through and are able to do that. Especially, I think that, you know, Sanchez, even throughout the last couple of years when he struggled, he's still dominated the Minnesota Twins. So especially if they're playing the Twins, give me Sanchez.
Can't imagine why the Twins would be involved with playoff implications, but I hear what you're saying there.
Hey, I'm saying playoff implications for the Tigers, not them.
Okay, fair enough. I would have to agree. Really, Mark Lowe is, until I see something better out of him in 2017 that says he's fixed whatever was wrong, And I know a lot of it had to do with velocity last year. I wouldn't trust him at all. He just gave up way too many, you know, late innings walk-off bombs. In fact, I was joking about that on Twitter with the, you know, the proposed MLB rule of, like, extra innings. They're going to start with a runner on second. You know, that was kind of an idea they were floating as a way to speed up games. And I thought, well, if you're going to just want to speed up a game, why stop with putting a runner at second base? Just let Mark Lowe come in and give up the walk-off dinger. The game's over. So forget that. Pelfrey, yeah. I'd be worried that he'd be missing the zone all over the place and putting guys on base. You have to go with a guy like Sanchez who can at least get swings and misses. So absolutely, Sanchez all the way, even though he might just as easily go for it, you know.
You say that about Mark Lowe, and the one Tigers game I made it to last year was here in D.C., against the Nationals, and sure enough, Mark Lowe gives up a walk-off home run.
That game. Yeah. That game. Is that the one?
Sanchez pitched, too.
I'm thinking of the game against the Angels when they clawed their way back from like an 8-run deficit and tied it.
Oh, yeah. No, that one. I went to bed. Thank God.
That was not the same game as the Nationals one, but you're right. Nope. He did.
No, the Nationals, Sanchez pitched. It was Sanchez against, I think, Strasburg, and Sanchez did all right, but then gave up like a home run later in later innings to give up the lead, and then the Tigers clawed back and got another run, and then, you know, Mark Lowe comes in, and sure enough, walk-off bomb right away.
Let's hope he's got that under control this year. That was just unreal. Of course, I like to point this out from time to time, but if you go back to the 2011 World Series, the famous Game 6, when the Cardinals managed to come back and tie the game in extra innings and then finally win it with a walk-off home run, David Freese, you know, we will see you tomorrow night, that whole thing. That was Mark Lowe pitching.
Really?
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Jeez. Man.
Yeah, I watched that game probably during the All-Star break last year, just going back and watching like old classic, you know, games on YouTube and that one. And when Mark Lowe walked out, I was like, you've got to be kidding. You've got to be kidding. He's the one that did that? Yep.
Yeah.
With Ian Kinsler watching, no less. So.
Those days after the All-Star break are worse, the worst.
I know.
Like, you know, the winter is bad and there's no baseball, but like that is like when you're in the routine, you're in the middle of the season, and there's like 4 days without baseball. It just
at
sucks.
At least it's warm and you can like go outside and do stuff. Like right now, true. You can't even do that. But
next year, the All-Star game is in D.C.
That's right.
I get to go.
Man, I need to make a trip. That's got to happen.
Yeah. Actually, go ahead.
I was going to say, what are they playing this year? Is it San Diego?
No, it's in Miami.
Miami, okay.
Yeah, which is funny considering the whole implications with Loria potentially selling the team.
Oh, goodness. So along these lines, Jay Winkler says, ugh, baseball's going to be good, right? I really effing need this.
You'd hope so. I mean, it's back, so it's good. And there hasn't been any bad news so far out of Lakeland, and so that's good. We'll see what happens, you know, and so for at least the first couple of months, it's going to be fun. Hopefully it is beyond that, but baseball's back and I'm excited.
Jay, you have nothing to worry about. It's going to be good. This is a team, again, we've said it before, they're rolling out there with the same crew as last year. We watched this team win 86 games last year. They could have easily won a handful more, could have put up 90. I think they're going to roll out there and do the exact same thing. Hopefully they get a little bit lucky, but either way, I think they're going to be in the hunt all the way down to the wire again. So I think it will keep us as fans very much engaged, certainly frustrated at times and elated at times, but I think it's going to be a good season to watch one way or the other. They're not going to walk out and steamroll, I don't think, although they could.
Who knows?
Hey, just think, if Verlander goes out, repeats his Cy Young, almost Cy Young season, but then he's eclipsed for the award because Michael Fulmer takes it instead, and Jordan Zimmermann pitches halfway decent, and then Miguel Cabrera and JD Martinez and Victor Martinez and Justin Upton provide like 300 runs all by themselves. It's a 96-win team, man.
I mean, honestly, if you take what they did last year and just add a healthy Jordan Zimmermann in, that's like a 90-win team.
Yeah. It's, like I said, no matter what outcome happens in 2017, if they really kind of suck it up and only win 79 games, or if they just crush and take 95 games, either outcome, I'm not surprised. And it's not a bad place to be. So I think
you got to win like 70 or 100 to actually surprise me this year.
That's right. One of those two extreme outcomes. All right. Last question. TX Sparty says, based on nothing but speculation, do you think Justin Verlander and or Miggy were ever in danger of actually being traded?
Not really. You know, those two, I don't necessarily think, I think that for the most part, some of these trade rumors throughout the offseason are overblown. You know, people hear things and just really kind of jump to publish anything they can because, you know, even we do it at Bless Your Voice just because there's nothing else to talk about.
Right.
And so getting something up, you know, gives you something to do, gives you something to talk about, gives people that are paid to do this something to write, you know, just kind of a quota to meet. And so I think that the whole kind of trade rumor season is really kind of blown a little bit out of proportion compared to what is actually going on behind the scenes. And I know that I've, you know, listened to podcasts before where people, you know, within teams are saying that, you know, we as fans only hear a small fraction of what goes on
right.
as far as like rumors and whatnot. But, you know, a lot of that stuff is just discussions that people have and nothing ever really gets all that serious. And so with those two, with the amount of money they're owed, I don't think anyone was actually in danger of being traded.
Yeah. And as far as the rumors coming out, you always have to wonder too, how and why did the rumor get out? Did somebody really, you know, scoop something? Or is that information being leaked on purpose, you know, for a strategical effect? You know, and does that make it true or false or, you know, whichever one? I think it was more serious than just whispers in the hallways, especially when you hear that Miguel Cabrera was contacted by Al Avila to say, hey, your name is going to come up in discussions. And Miguel Cabrera said, okay, you know, basically I'm okay with that. Uh-huh. So I think it was more of a possibility than just, you know, bloggers needing something to write about. But like you said, the number of prospects they would have wanted back and the amount of money on those contracts, I think put it a little further out of reach than say JD Martinez was far more likely, I think, to be moved than either of those guys.
Yeah. And the fact that JD Martinez even wasn't like all that serious, like we heard a couple rumors about him, but there weren't that many. Mm-hmm. I just don't think that even he and Ian Kinsler weren't really serious considerations to be moved, then I don't think Cabrera and Verlander were particularly close.
Yeah. If JD Martinez had been traded, I would not have been at all surprised. If Miguel Cabrera had been traded, my jaw would have hit the floor.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So I would say probably not in a whole lot of danger, if that answers the question. Okay. That will do it for our mailbag and Into the Mob Scene segment. When we come back, we'll have a quick chat with Steve Mickelson. Steve is the sportsbook director at Atlantis Casino. We've talked already this podcast about the win totals and Atlantis putting the Tigers at 85.5. We'll talk with Steve about exactly why they're there, what that number means, and we'll deal with all that right after the break.
Three now. Here's the 2-2. Oh, boy. Curveball grabbed the outside corner. Victor not happy. Pitch that he felt went around the plate. You rarely see Victor complain. Brad Ausmus better get out there quickly. Oh, and Victor got tossed. Wow.
And welcome back from the break as we move into the final portion of our program, the seventh inning kvetch. As you know, we like to use this part of the show to sometimes speak with special guests, and today we do have a special guest indeed. Steve Mickelson, the sports book director for Atlantis Casino out of Reno, joins us today. Steve, thank you so much for coming on the program again.
It is my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I remember we got to talk right about the same time last year about the same subject, the fact that you and your casino are always the first to market to post MLB win totals and invite the general public to begin wagering on the different team totals. And so congratulations, I guess, again, on getting first to market. This makes 11 years in a row for you now. The first question I had for you was, it dawned on me this morning, What is it that started you on this path of saying, I'm going to be the first one to put my neck on the line out there all those years ago?
Well, I've always been a huge baseball fan, and anyone who knows me, I am more of an expert in the baseball area than other sports. I mean, granted, in my job, you have to know all the different sports, but, you know, I have a preference for baseball over the other sports. And it's just one of those things that I've been very fortunate to work at properties that have allowed me to step out and do these kind of things. You know, we don't take a ton of money on them as far as limits, but they allow me to do it. And over the years, I've shown that, you know, it is a profitable, you know, venture for the property that I work for. So they've kind of just stuck with it, and we seem to do it every year.
So what was it that kind of drove you to that point of saying, listen, everybody else gets their win totals out there, but from now on, I'm going to be the guy that gets it there first?
I think I was just impatient waiting for them. You know, it's one of those, you know, they want to hold off and go the end of February, beginning of March, when everybody's in camp and they get an idea. And, you know, my view has always been, you know, I want them out right as the players and pitchers are reporting to camp. you know, right at the beginning. Here you go. Everybody's talking about it. The pro football big game is over, and focus needs to turn to baseball, and I follow down that road and want everybody's focus to turn to baseball as well.
Which, speaking of, a little bit of a side discussion here, how did you guys make out in terms of the Super Bowl this year?
It was all right. We take bets on so many different things. I mean, we had like 300 different props. So, you know, you like to think that out of everything you offer, you're going to win more than you lose. You know, favorite and overs are never good for sports books because that's what the public tends to bet. But, I mean, we did all right, and, you know, we made some money, and my bosses were happy.
See, because I was thinking a comparison to the year before that, there was a little bit of an upset with the Broncos beating the Panthers, who were heavily favored. But this year, the Patriots, I think, were favored all the way up until, you know, the game began, and it looked like they weren't going to win. Was there a moment there where you were kind of sweating it out, thinking, oh, no, oh, no?
Well, I can tell you, I was with everybody else. I didn't think the Patriots could win at all. I was actually sweating the beginning of the fourth quarter because we have a proposition out there of exact number of points that, you know, teams score. And at that time, the Patriots were sitting on 12, and if they don't score that touchdown, I think we're like 8-9 minutes to go. You know, if they don't score and then the Falcons kill a lot of time off the clock and go down and drive and then the Patriots get it back and don't score, you know, because we hung that, I want to say it like 250-1, and, you know, we took a few bets on it. So that was the part of the game that I was sweating out going, you know, how do I explain to my boss that, you know, we're going to lose all this money because the Patriots scored exactly 12 points. So,
well,
you know, but again, that's the beauty of, you know, the big game like that. I mean, we offer so many different things.
Yeah. Yeah. And obviously that is like the most heavily bet sports event of the entire year. So I can't even imagine, like, once that's over, the sense of relief for you to say, now I can get back to the sport that I love, baseball, kind of focus on that.
Yeah. I take the next 3 days off and, I stay home and basically, you know, I read through several different publications at that point. I actually, you know, make up, because it helps me, a Excel spreadsheet. So I, you know, have like the starting nine for each team. I have six players on the bench, six starting pitchers, eight relief pitchers, top six prospects. So, I mean, I sit down with every team and just kind of go through them and what I think you know, who will be starting where, and that's kind of how I come up with the numbers, is just evaluating the teams and looking at them and comparing them. And again, it's a labor of love because it's stuff I love to do.
Great, which is the next kind of question I wanted to get into. I know we talked about this in some detail last year, but I mean, at this point, we have new listeners in our audience that haven't heard that conversation. But let's talk a little bit about your preparation method. I remember talking last year about the fact that this is really more of a manual process for you. You don't necessarily have, you know, the casino doesn't give you, you know, software that you just do data entry and then it spits out the numbers for you. You have to kind of do this analog style, so to speak.
Yeah, no, this is all me. You know, I sit at home on my desk and my laptop, and, you know, there's about five different baseball publications that I read cover to cover, and you know, I've created this spreadsheet with the different teams, and it's all manual. There is no computer. There's no feeding it into the computer like you get with, you know, the COTA standings from Baseball Prospectus. This is all manual by me.
And it leads to the question, I think, of maybe sort of a misunderstanding for people that watch the games but don't necessarily bet the games. When they see these numbers come out, these win totals, they see that you've got the Tigers set at 85.5 was the opening. What is kind of the goal of your, how do I put this, your accuracy level here? It's not necessarily to hit that win total exactly on the mark, but what is it?
Well, the purpose behind it, and this is where it's different than the PECOTA numbers. The PECOTA numbers are actually looking to give a, you know, replay of what they think the season is going to be and the exact standings. Our goal is to put up a number that's going to attract wagers on both sides. You know, there should be, in a perfect world, you're going to have X amount on the Tigers over 85.5 and a perfect number of bets coming in on under 85.5. So my goal is more trying to find that number that I think the public looks at it and says, ooh, you know, man, I don't know if I want to go over or under. Because if you hang a number, you know, and last year, one of the numbers I was wrong, I had the Cubs at 89.5. Well, everybody looked at it and said, oh, that's way too low. and they all bet them over. They won 103 games, you know, and that's one of those that, you know, we're not the most profitable on that game. So the goal is to try to attract it. Now, keep in mind that you really, I mean, it's cool to be right on the number, but a few years ago, I think I had four teams that fell exactly on the number, which hurt because, you know, when you have that, you know, you open 85.5 and you take under 85.5, so you drop to 84, and then you take over 84. If the game falls 85, which is right at that number, every bet's a winner. Hmm. And that's where at times it can, you know, make it difficult. So it's great to be really accurate, but on the other hand, it can actually cost you more money because if you're right on the number, you run the risk of getting middled and everybody's bets win.
Right. So you're looking more for kind of a range, and I'm wondering, you know, what's an acceptable plus minus range for you in terms of the wins? Is it plus minus two wins, three, four? Where do you like to sit?
In a perfect world, and I can tell you I've been pretty successful with this over the years, and I'm very thankful. Normally going into the last week of the season, I have about half the league that still has action going into it. And usually rolling into the Friday of the last weekend, I usually have about five, six, seven teams that still have action through their last three games. Because the goal is also to have you as a fan have enjoyment through the course of the year rooting for this. You know, you don't want to make a bet and come July, you know, you're already throwing your ticket in the trash. You know, the ideal would have you getting all the way to that last weekend still, man, I got a winner here, or, you know, I got to watch this game type of thing, which is great. So, you know, within 2 to 3 games of where they really finish would really be ideal.
That's a funny point you bring up about the fan engagement throughout this process, because it's another point I was thinking about, that when you put these numbers out there, it's very different from when Pecota puts numbers out there, or USA Today just released their, you know, their projected win totals for each team. Because let's face it, Steve, by the end of the season, I'm not going to remember what USA Today said about how many games the Tigers were going to win. But if I had money, if I've got a ticket from Atlantis, you bet I'm going to remember exactly what number Steve Mickelson said. So you got to like be right on the ball with this, because people are engaged with your numbers.
Absolutely. And the other difference is, you know, this is money. Money always talks. You know, so I need to be more accurate and fairly close, because, you know, we're taking live wagers on it, where USA Today, I mean, last time I knew, you couldn't walk in there and make a bet. You know, they're putting it out, and it's much more, and don't get me wrong, ours are for entertainment, but ours are have a betting value to it. So I need to be real close to being right.
Let's talk then about 2016. We'll revisit those numbers just a little bit. I was curious to know, what were some of the, you already mentioned the Cubs as being a team that you said at 89, they came up with 103. That's 14 over what you had suspected. Were there any other big surprises from last year that you went, oh, okay, got to keep that in mind for 2017?
No, not really. I mean, I don't really look that much back at the numbers I had the year before. You know, I'm aware of it when I'm making the numbers and I look at it, but it's not one of those, ooh, you know, I really missed on this team or I really missed on this team. I can tell you one of the things that sticks out in my mind from last year is, you know, I had the Giants as the number one team at the All-Star break. When the Giants actually had the best record in baseball, I was feeling pretty good because it was, hey, look, everybody had the Cubs. I got the Giants, and this is where they're at. But, you know, then the training wheels came off that bullpen, and that Giants bullpen was just terrible the last, you know, 6-8 weeks of the season. So by the end of the season, I was looking kind of bad on that one. But, you know, again, it's just you sit down, you look at them. Yeah, offhand, I couldn't tell you who I was that far off of that I can recall.
The one that stood out was the Cubs, and then the other one was maybe the Cleveland Indians. I think they came up 10 games over what you had set the number at, which, you know what, they surprised everybody, I think, in that respect.
And see, last year I actually thought the Royals were going to win that division.
Yes.
You know, but when you look at it and, you know, I mean, all their players went down at some point. I mean, Moustakas missed, you know, most of the season. Kane was down for a while. You know, Hosmer at the end of the season wasn't the same. So, you know, that's the thing, is you can't factor in injuries. And one of the reasons I do my spreadsheet is because I try to go 6-7 starters deep because I'm aware that every team's going to have those injuries. You know, I like to look at the benches also because you need that depth. And you know, an example this year would be the Dodgers are a little bit higher on a win total than I would normally make them. But it's because they go, I think, 7-8 starters deep. I mean, the Dodgers have depth at every single position. You can take, you know, the non-starters. So you take their starting pitchers 6-9 and their bullpen guys, you know, after at 7-10 and their backup position players, that's probably a better team than the Padres. You know, so that team has a ton of depth.
Yeah, the Dodgers in particular kind of stood out as far as this year's totals that you put out there. I think you had them at 91.5 to start, easily in the top five, you know, of teams with the most wins. Let's go back to Cleveland for a second, though, because that was another point that stood out compared to last year. This is one of the teams that I think you've made one of the biggest adjustments on in terms of last year saying, hey, 84 wins. This year saying, no, 92.5. Listen, man, in Tiger Town, we spent all of last year saying this can't be happening. Cleveland's got to be a fluke, but apparently you don't think that's the case.
And that number, to give you more insight into that number, for instance, I have the Indians with the most wins in the American League, but I actually have the Red Sox as a smaller odds, so they are more of a favorite to win the World Series and to win the AL pennant, and the reason is that division. You look at it, and the White Sox sold off their players. They're rebuilding. The Twins have been rebuilding. You know, the Kansas City Royals, to me, that was the toughest team to pick a win total because if they get out to a great start, they start off the season 20-10, I think they're all in. I think they're going to go for it this year and try to win. If they start off the season 10-20, this is a team that's, you know, Hosmer, Moustakas, Kane, you know, all three of those guys are going to be traded by the All-Star break. Hmm. So that's a tough number to make. And to me, when you listen to all the stuff the Tigers were saying is, you know, they were cutting payroll. They were looking to move J.D. Martinez. There was all the Ian Kinsler trade talks. There were all this. But I think the Tigers sat back, looked at it, and said, wow, the other teams in this division are, you know, basically giving up on the season in a sense, and they're selling off. You know, we got a pretty good team here. If we just hold pat, you know, we could actually make a run at this division. So, you know, I have the Tigers at 85.5 because I think they wanted to rebuild and get rid of some salary, but I think they looked at it and had to stay in. But because of all of that, the Indians were the one team that, you know, they went out and they picked up Edwin Encarnacion. Michael Bradley should be back next year. The end of the season, I mean, they got to extra innings in Game 7, you know, without Carlos Carrasco, without Danny Salazar. So, to me, when you look at it, they have a lot of depth. They've improved from what they had last year, and I believe the division's gotten weaker. So that's the reason I have the Indians as high as I do.
So you're looking at that more in terms of their head-to-head matchups with the rest of a very weak American League Central is essentially what you're saying.
Absolutely. When you look at it, if they can, you know, play 500, a little above the 500 with the Tigers, you know, but you're playing 18 games with the other teams. I mean, you know, they're going to win 12-14 against the White Sox and Twins. You know, so if you look at it in that sense, they're going to build that winning margin just by beating up the other teams in their division.
All right, I'm going to put that on hold for just a second because I want to come back to the Central specifically and the Tigers and the Indians and all of that stuff. But before we go into that, let's just take a quick detour. We talked about the fact that you have the Cubs listed at 95.5 wins. That's the most of any team. But shortly, you know, under that, you've got the Boston Red Sox in the 92-93 range, somewhere in there. Boston made some huge adjustments. I mean, they just stacked, you know, they went out and got Chris Sale and they did all this stuff. Who do you like in a World Series matchup? It's got to be Boston or Chicago, right?
Yes. The odds that we have, if you looked at it, the two teams with the lowest odds are the Cubs and the Red Sox. You know, I like the moves the Red Sox made. I know they brought in Sale. But, you know, the things the Red Sox fans have to understand is Dombrowski has sold the future of this team for a three-year window. You know, this Red Sox team, if they don't win a World Series in the next three window, you're going to look back at this and say, you know, they gave up Moncada and they gave up, you know, Kopech, and they gave these guys up and all the players they gave up to the Padres for Kimbrell and all of that. And you're going to say, you know, we might have been a really good team for 10 years. But on the other hand, you know, if you got the shot, my view has always been you need to go for it. I mean, you don't get that many opportunities to win a World Series. So when you have the team, do it. So I like the moves they made, but, you know, what if Chris Sale comes out and looks like David Price of last year and David Price never rebounds? It all looks good on paper, but they still have to perform. And again, if they get out to a slow start with that Boston media and all the pressure that's on them this year, you know, to me, this is a team that pretty much has to go to the AL Championship Series or the season was a failure.
It's funny because I'm talking as a Tigers fan, and of course we had Dave Dombrowski running the show for many years, and he did essentially the same thing, just sold as many prospects as possible and loaded up on stars. They had one of the best pitching rotations ever, you know, for many years, and in fact they only made it to the World Series the one year in 2012. So it's all very familiar, this conversation that we're having with in terms of Dombrowski and the Red Sox.
Right, and you look at it, and I mean, everybody sat back, and it's like, you know, how come he doesn't go get a shutdown closer? You know, if you took an Andrew Miller or a Wade Davis or any of those guys and threw them on those Tiger teams, you know, the Tigers probably win it 2 years, win it all.
Right.
You know, so he spent the money, and again, did a good job, but he sold off your future. He sold off your minor leagues to make a run at it, but he still didn't seem to me, as a fan watching, to address what I thought was their biggest glaring need, was a shutdown closer.
Yeah, and so it seems like maybe he's got that problem semi-corrected in Boston. He's got Kimbrel there, so best of luck to them.
Yeah, and boy, he gave up a bunch for Kimbrel. You know, he's given up some for Thornburg to get from the Brewers. So, I mean, he has given away a lot of prospects to try to correct that mistake that, you know, he didn't do in Detroit.
It is. It's like he's gone all in with Boston the same way he went all in with Detroit, except his, you know, his chip stack was a lot bigger with Boston, so it means a lot more. If he does not win this, it's a bad look for him again.
Absolutely.
Touch on the Cubs just briefly again. I was very curious to see the 95.5 win total posted and thinking, you know, they've topped that 2 years in a row. Of course, they won 103 last year. I think they won 97 or 98 the year before that. And I thought, well, as a bettor, wouldn't I just automatically take the over after you posted 95.5? What is kind of the upper limit that you would, you know, feel comfortable placing? Would you go to 97? Would you go to 98?
I believe, and I don't have it in front of me, and I'd have to do a bit of research. I believe the highest total I ever had was the Phillies a few years back with, you know, when they had Halladay and Cole Hamels and Cliff Lee and,
right,
you know, Ryan Howard could actually hit a pitcher. I think they were like 96.5 or 97. So this Cubs total is as high as any total I've put up there. And keep in mind that, yeah, you might look at it and say they won 103 last year, so they should go over in the year before they went over. But if anything goes wrong, anything at all, it's tough to get to 96 wins. So I had to go to a number high enough. You know, last year, 89.5 obviously wasn't high enough. So you have to go to a number high enough that you need to find people might say, you know what, I could play the under. You know, maybe Rizzo goes down and is out for most of the year, or Chris Bryant is out for 6 weeks, or, you know what, Lester's getting up there in age, and Arrieta might have a bad shoulder, and Lackey's old, and, you know, the rotation, that starting rotation has some question marks. If it all goes south, you know, they're not going to get there. So you have to go high enough to have somebody think about placing an under bet. You can't just, you know, and that's another big difference is, you know, a USA or a Pakoda, they can hang any number they want because they're not going to take money on it, you know, and even if it is unrealistic. So we have to consider that we want somebody to play the under. We can't just all take over money.
Right, right. And that's the question I guess I had is because if it's too low, you would think, especially coming off such a hot season last year, if you hung a number like 91 or 92 wins for the Cubs, I would think you would just have a, you know, an avalanche of over bets if you went too low.
Absolutely. You hang 91 or 92, and the only bet you're going to take is the over. I think at 95.5, they got to sit back and think about it. Because, you know, really, if you're going to play this, you got to think that you got about a three-game cushion. You know, if it's one of those, look, I guarantee they're going to win 99 games, then play the over.
No, I know. But, yeah, and that leads to kind of an interesting point on this, because I know it's part of what you do is you have to engage and interact with what the public is telling you after you've hung those initial numbers. And I know you told me this last year. I'm sorry, I'm forgetting, but I think you said those numbers stay active until, what, opening day, and then they come down?
Yes. As soon as the season starts, we do take them down.
Okay, so you've got from now until, you know, sometime in April to kind of interact with the public. Have any of those numbers moved at this point? Have you seen so much action here, there, wherever else that you've had to kind of adjust it already?
Yeah, actually, there's a decent amount of numbers that have moved. You know, for instance, the Tigers are down to 84 now.
That was what I was going to ask you, if the Tigers had moved down yet.
Yep, Tigers have moved down. You know, but I think this is a solid team. I think they are absolutely a wild card team in the AL and can contend for it. You know, the Astros now are up to 89.5. I think that's a pretty big number considering what I think is going to be a pretty competitive division when you look at it, the Astros, the Rangers, and the Mariners. And, you know, this Angels team, if their pitching could ever stay healthy and do what they're capable of, you know, this is a team that could play around 500. So that 89.5, you know, to me seems like a big number. Dodgers have actually gone up to 93.
No kidding.
Which, you know, we were talking the 91.5, and they're up to 93 now. So, yes, we do have some movement on these different totals.
So let's kind of take the last bit of our conversation here and focus in on the Tigers now that we've kind of leaned that way a little bit. Last year, you set them at 85. This year, it's at 85.5. And I got to tell you, they won 86. You were right on the money with that. That's got to be like a dream result for you, right?
I do enjoy it when I am close. You know, again, I don't need to be perfect or anything, but you know what? If I can get 20, 22 of the teams, you know, fairly close, you know, because it's also my reputation. If I put this out and I'm always wrong every single year and, you know, I get nothing right, one, my bosses won't let me continue to do it, and two, you know, people like yourself, when they talk, he doesn't know what he's talking about. So, you know, I take great pride in these numbers, and I'm very proud of them.
And so the fact that you're starting the Tigers out this year even half a win higher, is that indicative of maybe a little more certainty on your part that they're going to perform a little better than last year? Or do you see it as kind of it's the same as last year, effectively?
I think it's the division. I'm not convinced that they're as good as they were last year, but I think their win total will reflect as good as last year, because I don't see the White Sox performing, the Royals if they sell this team off, the Twins. It's the other teams. It's the same thing with the Indians. It's one of those. I think the Tigers are clearly, to me, the second best team in this division unless the Royals get out to a great start. So, you know, Verlander had a great year. I mean, he bounced back last year almost like the Verlander we knew. Michael Fulmer, I'm a little concerned about his innings. He threw a ton of innings last year. But on the other side, I mean, is Jordan Zimmermann and Anibal Sanchez going to be as bad as they were? And, you know, I've been a big fan of Daniel Norris. You know, I like the fact that they picked him up from Toronto. So, you know, I think this kid's going to be pretty good. And, you know, Bruce Rondon, if they can keep him focused and throwing Frankie Rodriguez out of the pen, he's old, but man, the guy just keeps getting it done. So I think the Tigers are a pretty good team. And even though he didn't hit last year, I'm a big James McCann fan. To me, he reminds me a lot of Jason Veritek. I think this guy in a couple of years is going to be a very good catcher who hits, you know, 270, 280, really handles a pitching staff great. So, you know, there's a lot to me to like about the Tigers. I just have my concern with center field is, you know, Tyler Collins, the guy, and you know, we saw Anthony Gose 2 years ago, but he couldn't hit a lefty, and then he fell off the face of the earth for the Tigers. So, you know, I do have some concerns with center field for the Tigers.
You probably heard the same kinds of rumors that I did in the offseason that, you know, they were going to kind of tear it down and they were going to talk about trading Ian Kinsler or even Miguel Cabrera or Justin Verlander. Certainly they were talking about shopping JD Martinez. Were you surprised that they didn't end up going down that path?
I think that if the White Sox don't make the moves that they make and the collective bargaining agreement is not what it came out, because I think that really forced the Royals' hands, because they're no longer getting number one draft picks. Because if they were getting first-round draft picks for the free agents that they lose this next year like they had the prior year, I think the Royals make another run and say, okay, look, we lose two of the three, we're getting two number one picks. But the fact that I believe it's a third-round pick, which, you know, first-round picks are hit and miss. Now you're dropping that far down. I don't see how the Royals hold on to two of these guys if they fall out of it. So I think the Tigers' decisions were made by just watching what the other teams were doing. So, and because of that, I think they realized, look, we have a good enough team. We can make a run here.
And so, as you were saying, that win total that you put up there, a little bit higher than last year, is really kind of more based on the fact that, look, it's basically the same team, but they're also playing against a much weaker division than they had to face last year. They can maybe scrape out a couple extra wins this year.
Yes, that is exactly what I'm saying.
Are they going to pose a formidable enough threat to really challenge the Indians for the division title?
I think if they can get Zimmerman and Sanchez turned around and pitching the way they should, and they can stay healthy, and I mean Miguel Cabrera playing 140 games and not being nagged by injuries, I think right there they can absolutely compete with the Indians. If the Indians have some injuries, you know, if Michael Brantley doesn't come back and Edwin Encarnacion goes down with an injury, and, you know, Corey Kluber, who put up a ton of innings last year all the way through the playoffs, you know, if he has some shoulder injuries or something like that and he's not the same pitcher, this Tigers team could, if the stars lined up, could absolutely win that division. I believe that. I think if a few things go right, they can be right with the Indians. It's just there's more question marks on that team.
And how much, I mean, you talked so much in this interview already, and I remember you saying this last year, you look a lot at things like the depth, and you're very aware of the fact that injuries can haunt any team. In fact, a lot of teams deal with at least some injuries. When you look at the Tigers' depth, how does that impact the way you set those win totals?
It absolutely plays a factor, you know, because injuries are going to happen. Every team's going to happen. And, you know, like right now I have Matt Boyd sitting at your sixth spot. And you know what? He can go out and he can win some games. You know, he's not that bad of a pitcher. You look at the bullpen with Justin Wilson. You got Alex Wilson, Bruce Rondon, Mark Lowe, you know, Daniel Stumpf. You know, Mike Pelfrey, swing man. He can easily step in the rotation. You know, he's not great, but, you know, this guy isn't terrible either. I just, you look at it, and they have some guys. Again, it comes to me as that center field. You know, is Jacoby Jones going to step up? Mikey Mayhook, I'm not a huge fan of him. Steven Moya, big guy, big swing. If this guy could ever figure it out, he could be a monster, but I'm not sure he's ever going to figure it out. You know, he's got a lot of holes in that swing, but, man, the potential is there. And are they going to give him that opportunity to play every day? Because it's tough if you're only going to get 100 at-bats a season, you know, to really develop your game. So I have some concerns with the Tigers. But again, I think when you sit down and you break them out versus the other teams, I think outside of the Indians and the Red Sox and, you know, maybe the Astros, I think they're right with the rest of them.
Very interesting. Yeah, I think a lot of Tigers fans feel basically the same way and say if this team gets rolling, you know, they can be an absolute panzer tank and you can't stop them. And I could see them winning 94, 95 games. But if a couple things go wrong, you could just as easily see them placing third place in the AL Central, only winning 82, 83 games, that kind of thing. There's just a lot of question marks. So your 85.5 is what I'm saying. 85.5 makes a lot of sense.
Well, thank you. You know, and Nick Castellanos, I mean, this guy took some big steps last year and was close to the guy that they were expecting him to be when they first brought him up. You know, and then he had some injuries and, you know, the second half didn't go as well. But, you know, I don't have it in front of me, but I think the guy's only like 24 years old or something, and he seems like he's been playing in the league 10 years.
Yeah, we waited a long time for that, too.
Yeah, you know, so, I mean, if he continues making that progress, I like Iglesias at short. You know, Justin Upton, again, outside of, what, a six-week period, the guy did nothing for the Tigers last year, and they still got those wins. So the Tigers have the potential absolutely to be as good as anyone in the American League, actually in baseball. It's just, you know, will they put it all together?
All right, Steve, as we wrap things up, I want to thank you again for coming on. And I hate to put you on the spot because, my goodness, you just put out, you know, 30 win totals. I'm sure that's, you know, a harrowing experience as it is. But I'm going to put you on the spot because it's what we do on this show. If you had to pick an exact win total for the Tigers this year, what would you call it?
I really think the Tigers are going to finish the season at 86 to 87 wins. Okay. So, I mean, I would tell you to go slightly over because I think some things might go wrong with the Indians, and I would put the Tigers at 86 or 87.
Fair enough, and good advice. So if I ever get out to Atlanta's casino, I'll be sure to take your advice and stick that ticket on the over for the Tigers.
Fantastic.
Steve, thanks so much for stopping in. It's a pleasure. I hope we get to do this kind of every year. It's nice to kick off the season talking with you about this stuff, someone who really knows their business. And again, I have a great deal of respect for the fact that you put these numbers out there. Like you said, you got to put your money where your mouth is. This is actually very loaded for you.
Well, thank you very much. And it was my pleasure being on your show, and I am available anytime that you need.
All right. Thanks, Steve. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye. All right. And that is going to do it for another episode of The Voice of the Turtle. Rob, any final comments before we kick it off?
No, I'm just excited for the season. I've already got my scorebooks and everything. We're ready to go.
Scorebooks? I didn't know you were...
I ordered a couple. I do that sometimes at home, and I ordered one this year, the EFIS League one.
I'm not familiar with that one.
I've heard good things about that.
Interesting. I used the Score.
It was recommended, and I'm trying it. It looks pretty solid, so we'll see how it plays out during the games. But no, I like to do that during the games. It helps me pay attention, especially if I'm like recapping it. It's easier to kind of look back at it and say, oh yeah, this is what happened.
Yeah, I'd say probably 5-6 times a year I do the same thing at home. You know, I'll sit and I don't do it if I'm at the park because you're up and down and getting beer and going to the bathroom or whatever, but at home I will still
stuff.
It's funny how, like you said, it does keep you more engaged, and mm-hmm. even during the game you kind of look back and just quick at a glance, oh, he's 2 for 3 or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool. I like that.
Yep.
And yes, it starts a week from Friday, first game of the
regular. All right, good. Yeah, and the World Baseball Classic coming up too. I'm excited for that.
Do you know when that's going to be televised? Is ESPN going to carry that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I imagine that like some of the games, because especially like some of the early round games are in like Japan or, you know, like Korea or whatever. And so some of those are going to be on in the, you know, wee hours in the morning too.
Interesting. I wonder if MLB TV will carry those.
Oh, yeah, definitely. They do.
Okay, cool. Then there's going to be some fun baseball to watch then.
I'm excited.
Early. Nice. All right, so remember, we're only one half of the conversation, and you are the other half, so leave us your comments at westofwoodward.com or find us online, Twitter. I'm at hookslide23, Rob is at BYBRob, and the podcast is at VOTT Podcast. And please subscribe and rate and review the show on iTunes if that is your preferred method of consuming the show. Otherwise, just drop us a note on Twitter and say, hey guys, good job, love the show, always feels good. All right, so on behalf of Robert Jackie and optimistic sports bettors everywhere, this is Hookslide saying have a great week. Keep an eye on those soon-to-be rising temperatures, and we will see you the next time on The Voice of the Turtle.